You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
So, welcome. Welcome to Dr. Michelle Live. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and we are walking this road. Actually, we are on a roller coaster of this road together. Sometimes it is stalls out, and sometimes it is just pitfall after pitfall after pitfall. And speaking of pitfalls, I'm going to tell you a story. And in fact, I'm going to tell you a couple stories that are going to talk, they're going to show you about God's amazing hand during times of darkness, depression, all kinds of things. Now. Use our modern medicine. If you need counseling, get it. When I need counseling, I get it. And if half of you don't want to listen because for some reason you think that makes me a weaker person, that's your prerogative. When I hear of a counselor myself who hasn't gone through therapy themselves, I think, how can they know? You don't have to go through the exact experience. But all of you who've gone through pain, trauma, betrayal, anger, wounds, father wounds, mother wounds, husband wounds, children wounds, grandparent wounds, generational wounds, you all know that when you come across someone that you're empathizing with and you don't even know why you're empathizing with them, in a way you don't think about it, but if you really sat back, you think, well, I'm so different than them. I wasn't going through what they're going through. Why can you help your friends? Why can you help those around you? Why do you empathize with what your child goes through? You aren't your child, but you remember what it was like to be bullied. You felt that deep core wound. Or you remember being the last person picked, or you remember being the most popular person in the world and how you picked on someone much like your child. So we empathize if we are empathetic creatures. And some of us are born into this world with a full house of empathy. It's a gift. It is a gift of God, a gift of the Holy Spirit. Just like you look at some of the most beautiful physically people on the world, even if they're the top models and we can say all kinds of stuff about that lifestyle, there are certain people who are gifted, they have a gift of an amazing physical beauty or an amazing musical beauty or a bunch of this, all of the above, or an amazing intellectual beauty or an amazing actuarial beauty, pattern-seeking beauty, accounting beauty. You know, sometimes I say, I have to back up here because I have to apologize to every accountant I've ever known. Only in this, and it's kind of funny actually, it's an apology with humor. And that is this. Oftentimes I will use, and I know and have loved many accountants as a friend, but I've known and used the concept to almost support, like the priest I talk about sometimes, to support that he isn't just way off in fairyland somewhere and imagining all these, you know, like the one I always say talks about, he's a very Orthodox priest, but he talks about being in a novena cloud. And I always say, and he was an accountant, like that's evidence that he's not some kind of kook, that he's down to earth. Well, that, and we all do that. It's like we do that in our own ways, don't we? We do that, well, and they must know because they're a doctor or so-and-so who's the, and then you give the title as if that is support of, and I understand it because I do it too. And you don't want to just say, well, if someone says, here, take this pill, and they happen to be somebody who just came out from behind a tree, looks a little shady, and it's an unmarked pill, you're going to want an expert giving you your pill. So I'm not against experts. However, I was talking to a very spiritual person. I mean, really, this person has gone through a journey that is parallel, same song, different verse, very different than mine, but very spiritual, and puts these spiritual dots together in such a way. And they and their work is such that you would say, yeah, that would go with a spiritual person. And they told me the other day that they're studying accounting. And he said, you know, someone told me that it was an odd thing that I was studying accountant. And I said, no, it's not. Because I somehow came to the realization, accounting, the word accounting, the word accountable. He said, when I started breaking my own issues, my own ties to certain unhealthy things, I realized the importance of accountability. And then I realized that there's a way. He had all this this interesting way of putting together the concept of how it came to him that accounting, he needed to learn accounting actually in the physical number realm in the world. And he's actually getting a degree. And it was a surprise to him. But for some reason, he needed to go there. So in every single thing that we do, everything, there's a spiritual component. And the only reason I said I want to apologize to everybody, because I always make it sound like that's like for the people that are very concrete. Well, I've never met anyone as less concrete as this person. But we have to open up our hearts and our minds to things. We have to understand that empathy comes from a core that we do not give ourselves. We can't get it from a book. We cannot pick it off a tree. We can't, except for the tree of wisdom. We cannot, given to us by God. We can't make it happen, but we can nurture it. I'm going to read you a couple of interesting things. One of them, if I have time, is actually, and it relates to, it's the opposite. It relates to brain changes in a neuro, I think it was Neurological Nature Journal or something. I have the reference, but it was about the neurological changes that happen in the brain over time that makes a liar eventually a liar, actually physiologically in the brain. They've been able to map, this is fascinating, they've been able to map in the brain how when, now we all lie, you know, we've all had our little white lies in our life and we're little kids and no, I didn't take that cookie. But what happens is that there are changes that occur in the brain with each lie. Now, none of us are ever going to be 100% truthful. We're not going to say as we walk into that big high-powered meeting, well, no, I'm late because I had diarrhea. You know, you're just not going to say that. But what they found was a person who has less empathy and has a propensity to lie, to be deceptive, to deceive. And they were talking about our businesses and how we accept this anyway. But on a personal level, the changes happen over time to where the comfort level and the normalcy of a lie seems natural. Remember when I said that young girl told me when younger girls were starting to get breast implants more and more frequently, this was 20 some years ago, and she was telling me at the beach about how everyone lays down on the beach and everybody, you can tell there, that's not natural. And she goes, but you don't understand. I said, doesn't that look weird? And she goes, no, natural looks unnatural to us. So there are those human beings out there, we wonder, of course they wouldn't lie, or how can they lie with such conviction? There are people out there who are so used to lying that they get actual changes in their brain. I have another story to tell you about how people, let me put it this way. I'm going to let God guide this particular session. As I said in the beginning of the program, this is not a substitute for diagnosis and treatment of your actual mental and physical issues and illnesses, because sometimes we need that jump start, and counseling and therapy and psychiatry, if it's done well, like anything else, like surgery, is all there for us to help heal so we can get on to the more spiritual and ethereal things. However, they are not separate entities. We've talked about that before. So before the break, I'm going to give you just a little proverb here. It's in Proverbs 4. Do not refuse to do that which is good when it is in the power of your hand to do it. Do not devise evil against your neighbor, seeing he dwells in peace beside you. Do not contend with a man without a cause, if he has done you no harm. So we're going to talk on the other side of the break. I'm going to go to Psalm 34, that asks God actually to contend to those people who do us harm, but that it's up to him as well. We're also going to talk a little bit about what that neurological study showed, and we hopefully will get into some matters of the heart, some matters of your heart, your relationships, and most of all, how you view you. I am Dr. Michelle. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can call 753-4BREAD-4. You can text, and you can also call. You can remain anonymous. You can also check out being a friend of the show if you like what you hear. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click friend of the show to provide your support today. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4. All right. So, oh my gosh. Well, I'll share a little personal story with you. I've been in a situation where, in my estimation, I'm fighting for my rights in a particular situation that I won't talk to you about at this moment, but I will. And most of that right is for me to be able to express my truth. That sounds vague. I know. I'm not in this situation, but I will give you an example of many situations that I've come across in other people. The example is people who have been sexually harassed, assaulted, or sexually abused as children. And in a manner in which it is no one knows outright except for the person and the perpetrator, and they live a lifetime with this. And after a period of time, as they go through depression, anxiety, I'm not saying that that will lead to this. These are some of the things that come from holding those secrets and living with that abuse. Depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, mood swings, desire to self-harm or self-mutilate, addictions, substance use and abuse, promiscuity, bad relationships, inability to attach, inability to trust. All those things come about. Now, a lot of people as adults, and you may know some of them or have read some books from some of them, as adults come out, or if something just happens to them, they come out and they say it. And oftentimes they're persecuted, they are demeaned, their truth is diminished. Because, and I understand that in an argument like something like that, innocents are accused, right? That does happen. So we have to have our checks and balances. That's what our country was founded on, checks and balances. But at the same time, many a person, it's really been weighted so that most oftentimes the victim is so traumatized and re-traumatized that they just give up or they buckle. So what has occurred is a situation where, and what they do is they try to find any little thing to discredit the person. I've seen it happen over and over again with people that I deal with. And so I didn't discover, it was shown to me, that someone who wanted to make a case against what I was fighting for, that will help other people, other women as well, that somehow I had made a contradiction. And they pulled a sentence out of one of my programs. And they had evidently listened to many. They might be listening now. Hello. And I hope, I do pray for them. So I do. I pray for you. Because I knew, because of all the people, because of the work I've done, because of my ex-husband, who was very interested in forensic, legalities, trial stuff, you know, true crime, that kind of thing. I knew that that's what happens, that people try to go to anywhere, especially in our multimedia world. So evidently this person had been listening to all my programs and pulled out a sentence. And it really was, you know, it really wasn't much, and it really wasn't, I mean, it really didn't show anything. And I don't mind, because I know what I meant. And it was one sentence out of an hour. And you know, you all know who listened to me. And probably this person knows now. And again, I do pray for you, but not because I think, oh, you're so bad, you're doing what you think is right, I guess. I don't know. But I hope you get something. Maybe there's a little sentence here. You'll remember it years and years from now. But if you listen, and all of you listen long enough, you know that I'm always going, oh my gosh, I said that wrong. Or, oh my gosh, I've made some snafus that actually have come out as if they were, I mean, they were, I won't even repeat them, because they were really bizarre. And so sometimes that does happen. And oftentimes, as you talk live, you just say what you say. So I guess what I'm trying to say is this. There's a thing called the Serenity Prayer. And part of the Serenity Prayer, and I had a discussion once with someone about, they didn't like the Serenity Prayer, and they kind of thought, and a very respected person, totally respect this man. And I was kind of agreeing with him at that time. It's about 5 years ago. And I don't agree with what I thought before. It's a beautiful prayer, the full prayer. But one of the things is, it is, let's see if I can remember. It's to accept the things I cannot change, to change, I need to find it so it's everywhere, to change the things I can, to accept the things I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that's only part of the prayer, right? And the other part is to walk this earth as Jesus did, one day at a time, because that's all we can do. So you can't change. I can't change. Someone who wants to backstab you in whatever way they're going to do it, or hurt you, or help keep covering up their iniquity. It's going to happen no matter what. They're going to find a way. It doesn't mean they're going to succeed. It just means they're going to find a way. So in all of this, it was even more confirmation to me. All right, I get it. And I'm not the one that has to do the fight exactly. There are other people doing the fight. I'm just part of it. But it is important, and it's important for the future of women. I know this. I know this in my heart. It's important for the future of mothers and wives. I know this. And young women and women who have been harmed. I know this. And I'm not going to stop.
But the reality is, it taught me the truth of that statement. And when I said about where, well, you know how I always say where angels come from, and you just get enough angels show up, listen, well, I swear my angels always come up as the, in the oddest places. I have had at least two or three pushing carts into big box stores, who, you know, their job is to collect the carts. I've had, I mean, you just cannot believe bus stops. So, yesterday I am just befuddled. And I'm walking out of this room. I'm freezing cold. And I say to somebody, oh, it's so cold in here. Somebody that was sitting on a bench. And she mentioned, said something to me. And I found a little piece of sunshine in this little walkway. And I, the, some lady heard me say that. And she turned around and she said something about, and it was kind of a sarcastic comment about, you know, why they keep it so cold in there. And then I said, oh my gosh, your jewelry is so beautiful. She had all this turquoise jewelry on with crucifixes and just beautiful. And she goes, why make it? And so I said, wow, that's really awesome. And we started talking about our jewelry. And then I was compelled to touch. I said, I'm sorry, but can I touch your necklace? Because there was this beautiful crucifix. And she said, yes. And then she looked at me and she said, oh, you have such beautiful eyes. And I looked at her and I said, well, you do too. Because her eyes were this, these really odd blue. And she was an older woman. And we started talking. And then she mentioned, she said, yes, my name is Three Saints. And I said, really? And she said, she goes, you look Italian. I said, yes, I am. And she goes, well, I have a special place in my heart for Italians. But she said, "Your my name, her name was Three Saints. And she gave me the Three Saints. And I thought, wow. And they, it was Three Saints. And she, I won't say them over the air because it's her name, but I'll just say, I'll put in three others similar in there. Monica, it was like Monica, Monica, Elizabeth, Peter, basically. That was her name. And then she said, she looked at me and she said something that made me think she might be Catholic. And I said, are you Catholic? She said, yeah. And she goes, but I'm not really completely now. And she said, let's pray together. And I'm right there in the hall. And she said the most beautiful prayer. And part of what she incorporated into the prayer was that part about let her know. She really, this is happening to me in this situation. This is what I'm saying. You just don't know where it's going to happen. Let her know. That means me. To have the wisdom to know what she can and cannot change, and the courage to follow through, the courage to go on anyway. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I had no way of knowing that when I resumed in the next couple hours, what was going to befall me. Now we can talk, or what I was going to have to witness, but we will talk about that on the other side of the break. But I want to get into this whole thing. I want to get into Paul, actually, 2 Corinthians. And I want to get into how this all fits in with neurological changes in the brain, your relationships, and what you might be feeling in your emotions day to day. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We are walking this roller coaster of a ride. I tell you, I love you all so much, because if this were like, I don't know, some just secular talk show or a talking head professional lecture, you'd all probably cart me away, think I'm a little bit crazy. But I know that many of you get it. And I love that because we need to, at least, we may not know each other or we may not get along. You may not like that person that talks this way or that way. But if you get it, if you get that part where it's not a logical thing, it's not something, but yet it's logical in the spirit. It's only logical. I mean, it's so logical in the spiritual sense that you have to just shake your head. Now, that's kind of a leap of faith. And so what do I mean by all this when I say that it the brain changes, this article, this neurological article changes the brain and how it adapts. It's a journal article. It is a scientific article and it's in Nature Neuroscience. And it's in one of those articles with a lot of little graphs and MRIs and PET scans. And it makes my eyes want to fog over. So, but I'll just give you the gist of it. This abstract that's in any kind of a scientific journal article, you have, it's broken down into parts. And usually it is the abstract which gives the, and that's how it will get accepted as well as to whether someone wants to do the study. It'll give you the title. It'll tell you who the contributors are and acknowledgments. And then it will talk about what the thesis is, what the whole concept is. Then it goes into the methods it's going to use. And this talked about a little bit about the amygdala. And we also know that the amygdala, which is a structure in the brain, changes with post-traumatic stress disorder. It changes with traumas and depression. So, you know, we are a constantly changing being. And remember, if you change the one way, you can change another way. So it doesn't mean there's nothing in our life written in stone. Even if we lose a part of us, we still have the essence of that. We have the reality. We may not have the leg that we had before if it had to be removed, but that doesn't change the fact that there is a whole, complete human right there still. All right. So this abstract, and I'm going to say briefly, we're not going to go into it a lot today, but I want to talk then the opposite of it too. So as I'm telling you this, think the opposite. Think about if you change your mind for the good, rather than going down this slippery slope, you can go up maybe the hard hill, but you can go up and grow the empathy I was talking about before. If you have it. Some people just don't have it. All right. It says dishonesty is an integral part of our social world, influencing domains ranging from finance to personal relationships and politics. Anecdotally, digressions from a moral code are often described as a series of small breaches that grow over time. Here we provide empirical evidence for a gradual escalation of self-serving dishonesty and reveal a neuronal or a neural mechanism supporting it. Behaviorally, we show that the extent to which participants engage in self-serving dishonesty increases with repetition. Using functional MRI, we show that single signal reduction in the amygdala, which is that structure in the brain, is sensitive to the history of dishonest behavior, consistent with adaptation. So in other words, when someone is hiding their addictions for years and years and years and years, their pornography, you who go into your pornography thinking, oh, well, it's no big deal. And I'm not downing you, chastising you. We have help out there. But now we're seeing they're putting together these pieces. We have the ability to see, just like we used to not have any ultrasounds of a developing child. Then we had ultrasound. Now we have 3D. They might as well be just walking, sitting there having coffee with you. So as we get more, that's why our modern world is a wonderful place too. And we should avail ourselves of it. We just have to put it in the right perspective. So using the MRI, we show the signal reduction in the amygdala that is consistent with adaptation. So anything you do, If you, all of a sudden, we lost all our, most of our food sources because of poisoning, and the only thing we could do is eat bugs, let's say, or eat something that we used to find disgusting, we would probably throw it up in the beginning. And we wouldn't have, we'd have to adapt to it. We'd have to get the right enzymes in us that came from the right bacteria that was on this horrible little thing we had to eat. We would adapt. And at first we wouldn't like it, but if we did this over a period of years, it's not, we may end up liking it, just like they have the Stockholm syndrome, where you end up liking your captors, your abusers, your hostage takers, your terrorists. So we have to be really understanding that this isn't, these just aren't isolated phenomena. This is just one brain, and it adapts or it doesn't. It doesn't carry a judgment. It doesn't say, oh, I'll adapt to this, but I won't adapt to that, unless you're aware of it. And then you can start going, whoa, I didn't know that I just would normally start adapting to this. I thought I just lied. I confessed it. We're fine. Or I'm hiding this addiction. I can stop anytime I want. It's changing your brain. You know, because again, when you're in addictions, we can say that's a sickness, and we can say, but part of almost any addiction must be a lie. You've got to hide it from yourself. You've got to hide it from your family, because there aren't going to be too many situations where you're going to really say, all right, to yourself, I think I need to take a break here and shoot up some heroin. And here, I'll invite the kids in too. And my wife, come on in while I do this. You know, daddy's got to do this. You're not going to do that in most situations. And when you do, and when there are families who actually do that kind of thing, it's a pretty dire thing. And if it gets the court's attention, they take the kids in the way and get the parents into treatment. So this is a really interesting concept, but imagine how wonderful it's telling you the brain can be if you do the reverse of this. So critically, the extent of the reduced amygdala, okay, that's the brain structure. It says critically, the extent of reduced amygdala sensitivity to dishonesty on a present decision relative to the previous one predicts the magnitude of escalation of self-serving dishonesty on the next decision. The findings uncover a biological mechanism that supports a, quote, slippery slope, unquote. What begins as small acts of dishonesty can escalate into larger transgressions. And so they go on to tell the method, and they show you all the MRIs, and it says, I can tell you more about it too, because it's very interesting. I don't want to do this before the break. I want to connect these dots for you, because oftentimes with people, especially women in abusive situations, they often want, people say, why didn't you get out? Why didn't you get out? How could you have been married 25 years? What happens is you adapt and you habituate in order to survive. That is why PTSD oftentimes occurs, and sometimes it doesn't occur till late, because the person then thaws out, rehydrates, starts growing different parts of them again when they're separated from the abuse. And then if they happen into a tiny trigger of that abuse, or if they were molested or whatever, and they just happen to walk in and they feel fine, but something, a movie, a song, a smell triggers, or war triggers that abuse, their body starts shaking. They start reacting. They become uncontrollable. They have a panic attack. So we have to look at this and say, yes. And then the person who's doing the abusing, when they have spent so long, for whatever reason, either being lied to as a child and or lying themselves to be safe in their own childhood. It doesn't mean we want to be around these people. It means, and that we have to understand them and still be around them. It means that, yes, that can happen. Then they go to learn that that's how you live in life. Things, you've all been around people like that. They lie about these things they don't have to lie about, but they do. And again, nobody's 100% honest. So we're not talking about these. I mean, they're kind of bringing it down to a very scientific, analytical level. But in real life situation, you know, we are human, right? And we sin. That's it. So that's what we do. Now, Would somebody, any of you, lie to protect your child in a way that if somebody was at the door with a knife and a gun and said, give me your child, you would say, he's not here? You know, of course. But this is more the self-serving. Don't forget the word self-serving in there as well. So I found that very interesting. But what I want to tell you is that no matter what you are, because there are some jobs out there, we laugh about being a lawyer. There are very good human beings out there that are lawyers, but they have to actually paint pictures that aren't true in order to get a defense. I don't understand it, but they do. And that's what they do. I don't know if this would apply to them. All I know is that when you have the self-serving situation, according to this one test, it makes discernible changes in the brain. And I'm purporting, and I know we can find statistical evidence to say the opposite is also true with developing your goodness and how you can change your brain with help and with determination. I am Dr. Fiorella. See you on the side of the break.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support today. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. We're walking on a crazy road we call life, where angels abound everywhere, every day, all day long, 24/7. They do not have bodies, so they don't have to like get in a car and go someplace. They don't have to stop for a bathroom break. They do not have to stop at McDonald's for a Happy Meal. They're around all the time, all the time. And you can, like Maya Angelou said about she was really talking about abusive relationships, but she said, if you meet somebody, she's talking about like how to figure, I think she was talking about how to figure out, you know, if somebody's, a lot of people say, what, why didn't I see this in the beginning? If someone tells you who they are, If someone shows you who they are, believe them. And I love that because people will tell you a lot of things. I love you. You're my soulmate. You're my this, you're my that, but show me who you are. And when they start to show us who they are, we bat them out of the way. We bat our eyes out of the way. We put the wool over our eyes, our own wool over our eyes. Now, we might, again, have been adapted and habituated to doing that from past issues, but we do that. But I do want to say, someone asked me over the break to delineate a little more about the question. Really came up about someone in an abusive relationship, and the woman was the one being abused verbally and mentally, and the husband left her. And it was like, well, what's that about? If he was getting what he was winning in that situation, and she was becoming less and less of herself. And I want to try to go into that, but this is our last segment. So if we don't get it finished today, we will go ahead and talk about that tomorrow. But back to the angels real quickly, and how they really are real and true, is that when you might meet someone that you can think of all the logical reasons, like this lady that prayed with me yesterday. Really? I mean, I am in the most secular place you can be in. I am in a bathroom break and I'm freezing and I only have 10 minutes. That's it. And I find a warm spot, and some lady who makes a flippant, sarcastic comment about why it's so cold in there, walking by, makes a sharp U-turn, and boom, I notice a jewelry. I somehow find myself touching it, and I go, this sounds weird, but I just really want to touch your crucifix here. And we start talking, and ends up she's praying with me. Now, really, how often does that happen? So I can either go, oh, well, that's a weird coincidence. But after a lifetime, or at least in the last many years since my reconversion, 14 years, where this stuff happens continually, I forget it easily and think, oh, that really wasn't real. But I know it is. So I want to tell you it is real. If they show themselves to you. Now, again, don't go around believing everything or think someone's got some great message for you. But if you know in that moment, you know, and it doesn't have to be anything big thing and you'll never see them again, maybe, and you don't give them anything, you know, you learn to discern it. You learn to accept God's gift for the moment, the little flash that happens. It could just be a smile. And you, my friend, are God's gift to someone else, always 24/7. So in talking about this dishonesty thing, and it will help answer a little bit of the question that I had at the break. And that is why, what's that about? Of the husband leaves the abusing husband leaves the wife. What's that about? Well, what happens oftentimes is that this particular person, let's see. I was going to read a little bit from this. It said, we observe clear evidence of escalation in self-serving dishonesty, such as the magnitude of dishonesty got larger and larger over the course of a block. For each participant, and then when they talked about a block, you know, I'm not going to read that, because when they talk about the block, we have to go back to the blocks and the graphs and all that kind of stuff. But the concept is this, that it was the escalation that talks about the what happens to the emotions, and the reciprocal happens to the abused. If you were abused as a child, if you're verbally or mentally abused. So it says people often perceive self-serving honesty as morally wrong and report uneasiness engaging in such behavior. That's most of us, right? Because we do engage in it, but then we're feel really bad about it. Consistent with these reports, physiological and neurological measures of emotional arousal are observed when people deceive. Blocking such signals pharmacologically results in significant increases in dishonesty. For example, in one study, students who had taken and responded to a mild sympathomimetic agent were twice as likely to cheat on an exam as those who took a placebo. All right. Okay. So you know what? We're just not going to be able to get to everything today, because that brings up a whole nother thing about medication and even prescribed medication. Because if you have blunt effects in your life from any kind of medication, then you can be in a situation where you can tolerate a lot more than you normally would. All right. So when we look at this concept, what they're mainly getting to is that what happens, and I talked, there are people who have less empathy than others. There are people who, through early childhood situations, have less emotion evoking stimulus. In other words, and this particular study says a large body of research demonstrates a response to an emotion evoking stimulus weakens with repeated exposure. In other words, in a quick answer, because we are going to run out of time, and I really apologize, I did not get to Paul 2 Corinthians or Psalm 35. So I'm just going to say Psalm 35, read it, please. And I'll read it tomorrow, I'll read part of it tomorrow, because it is awesome. It is awesome. It really gives depth to giving everything over, because God, Christ's yoke is light, and your burdens are heavy. But we'll get to that tomorrow, I promise. So the point of this, though, because this will tie into it, is that the person who's doing the escalation is, barring true mental illness, although it's categorized as part of a mental illness complex, is the rage and abusiveness, and the addictions, of course, usually go hand in hand, not always. But just as that person's emotion evoking stimulus weakens. In other words, if their baby is crying and crying and crying and look at them with those little puppy dog eyes and they're still abusive, or if their wife is doing the same thing and doesn't understand how they're harming the little girl inside of that wife, if they don't get the doing it over and over makes them actually less able, the abuser less able to respond internally to that emotional cue that this is bad. Don't do this. You're hurting someone. Likewise, someone who's had to survive in it because they're too little or they're too young to get out, or they're a wife and they have kids at home, or they don't know, or they think they must stay in it. Their ability, their emotion evoking stimulus gets weakened. So the emotion they would normally feel, the outrage, we often say with people who have had and suffered abuse, where's the outrage? Where's the outrage? Because after a while, these things that you go, oh my God, what are you even saying to me? This is horrible that happened to you. They're saying, and then I put bread, butter on my bread, and then they'll give you something that'll knock your socks off, because over time, the emotion that normally would get them to where their legs were shaking and they were vomiting had to be subdued. It got weaker and weaker. So you see how the hand in glove situation happens in an abusive situation. That's why do not blame yourself, or don't feel even more, because you can re-traumatize or abuse a person. If you said this, why didn't you get out? I've asked those questions to people myself. Why didn't you get out? Why didn't, what happened? You ask it to your own self. If this was happening, why didn't I just freak out? Why did I take it? And the world would say, the legal world would say, I've dealt with some people recently who lost custody in really awful situations. And I was being as impartial as I could in the situation. But the reality is, you see that their tolerance, they're so beaten down that it doesn't look weird to them anymore. Remember what I said in the beginning of the program? Natural looks unnatural now. Just like the study says, deception looks like truth. That was my water bottle, in case you heard that. Deception looks like truth. And in the other way, abuse sometimes looks like love. So I want you to ponder on that, because we have to go. But there is hope, salvation, resurrection. It is beautiful to first wake up. And if you suffer while you're waking up and it hurts, it's okay, because not only will your spiritual life help you, it will be necessary to go through this to open it up, but the world out there can help you too. Your therapist, your friends, all kinds of things. So I'm Dr. Michelle. Please email me, DM live at redboxmedia.com. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Dr. Michelle Live.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.